Okay, we're going to start with some funny stories. All right. I've got my two friends. Come on up. This is Linda Scudder, you all probably already know.
Yes.
And Indira. We, a year and a half ago, spoke at the Bahamas together with Pastor Dave Adams. Yeah, yeah. And then Vinetta, but I kept calling her Vendetta. It was like, sorry about that. They're already telling our stories. We had so much fun, so we hope you'll enjoy our stories as much as we do. Okay, so first of all, I'm going to start with a drink of water.
Okay. I got sick, so I was starting to get sick, and then we had all these other episodes. But you know when you're not really allowed to be sick at something like that. So you just have to, you know, I would go, we had three bedrooms and three bathrooms, and we would just, I would go in my room and just crash. Like, they wouldn't even see me for a few hours because I just died on the bed and everything. So anyway, there's a whole long story to Shelley's iPhone.
But we're going to start when I arrived at the airport.
Yes, there you go.
Okay, so I arrived at the airport, and I was told there would be someone there to meet me, a young man with a sign that said Shelley. Okay. Oh, Vinetta, come on up. So Vinetta is Dave Adams' wife. Okay, she brought us three there to the Bahamas. All right. So I arrive at the airport. If you need to correct anything, yeah, come on up. It's going to be a story told in tandem here. So when I arrived at the airport, I didn't see any person with a sign that said Shelley. And there was another young man, and I was having trouble getting my suitcase off the baggage carousel. So he helped me. And then he said, well, let me help you get to the line that was to go outside to go through. I think we had to go through customs again or something. Anyway, so he was helping me. Still nobody. So I get outside and I'm just kind of looking. And I think I called somebody who was my point person. I don't think it was you, Vinetta. And they called Kwame, who was my driver. And Justin was the sign boy that was with him. So anyway, they finally found me on the sidewalk waiting. And so Kwame, I said, what is your name? He said, Kwame. I said, Crummy? I didn't quite understand. My ears have gotten bad with all the
language.
So anyway, I called him Crummy the rest of the time just for fun. They called him James because he was our driver. But I called him Crummy. So anyway, I finally get in the car, and he looked at Justin, the young man, and he said, did you not hold up the sign? And Justin said, no. And Kwame said, what a waste of ink. He was very funny. And so Justin said, well, I saw her at the baggage claim. I thought it might be her, but she looked like such an elegant lady with a bag boy by her side. And I thought she was probably waiting for a limousine. Okay, so anyway, now we're a little late. So we go and pick up these two ladies for the service that night. We're running late. And Kwame said, don't worry about it. We're on island time, so we're not to worry about it. So then I'm meeting Indira for the first time. And I said, Indira, where are you from? And she said, you probably remember.
Trinidad. Yes.
And I said, oh, well, who's the president there? And you said. You said.
Somebody.
That was a lady there.
Yeah, well,
I told you her name.
Yes.
I didn't.
I don't remember the name. Yes. And she said, but. I guess a she?
It was a she.
That she's only president in name only.
In name.
In name only.
It's like England, the king. So we have a president like the king. Like, and we have a prime minister who does everything.
Yes, so the prime minister runs things.
Yes.
And I said, she's in name only. I said, kind of like the United States, you know, with Biden.
At the time. Yes.
And
yes.
Everybody laughed.
Yes.
And then she said, well, the prime minister's the worst.
Yes.
And I went,
The worst? What's a worst?
She didn't know what a worst was.
A worst. A worst.
And it sounded horrible. And I was afraid to ask. And she and finally Kwame said, "Oh no, the worst. He's the worst. So now we know.
Now we know
what worst means. Okay.
Thinking a lot of different things.
Yes. Okay. So let's see that we're going to get to the next day. This is the 22nd, I think, on Monday.
Monday.
So we go to the service the next day. No. Okay, I think I'm going to skip to the 23rd, January 23rd.
That's where the thing...
Because it was my birthday.
Yes.
I turned 70 years old. And so Crummy, dropped us three off at the Pirate Museum. It's very famous in the Bahamas. And with his wife, Jennifer, I believe. And so we were walking through. I loved it. It was just right down my alley, you know, and I was taking pictures of all the signs to show Adam later of the history of the pirates, because we're pirates, you know. My husband's Patch the Pirate, if you don't know. And so anyway, so we get to the very end in the gift shop, and I'm buying all this loot. You know, like for pirates. And suddenly Indira looks at me and said, "You only have on one earring." And I went, "Oh no, I've had these for over 20 years. I love these earrings." And so we went up to the cashier and I said, and we looked around the gift shop, searched. And then I went up to the cashier and said, "Here's my name and my phone number and my address. If my earring turns up, it looks like this." She took a picture of it. It's not this earring. "And if somebody turns it up, would you please mail it to me?" And she suggested, "Why don't we go backtrack through the whole museum?"
You can imagine how we were going back. We just came out of the museum, entire museum. We had the back, so we need to go back the other way now. So we're going back.
And that's all dark.
And it's all dark. Yeah. And that's something that you're not allowed to do. But she said, because, you know, Shelly's Shelly. And you know, after Shelly told her, you know, in her way, she said, "Okay, you all can go back too."
Oh. Of course. So we had our flashlights on our phones, all of us searching every inch of the floor through the whole museum. No earring. We walk back to the gift shop, looking all again. So we get. And so Indira says, we get back to the gift shop. Indira says, "Maybe it fell off in the car."
Yeah.
Okay. That's a good idea. So we went to the car and we searched the car. No earring. Well, it probably fell off on the road.
Yeah. That's
well, it's gone now.
Look at the road.
All right. So no earring. Okay. Dear Jesus, it's okay. I can have one earring like a pirate. And so anyway, so we get back to our Airbnb. Yeah. I go to my room to take a rest. And there on my dresser is the other earring. I had never put it in. My niece tells me I have ADHD. And I said, "Are you sure?" And she said, "Yeah." And just so you know, we have not been invited back. But Indira has.
She's a serious one.
You took a break.
I took a break. I needed it. So we get to that night. It's still my birthday, and they have a beautiful cake for me. Sing happy birthday, and a tiara, and a thing that says queen. I'm queen of drama and the Bahamas. Okay, so we're getting to the funniest story yet. So we get back to the room that night, the Airbnb, and I want to call my family, and I can't find my phone. It's not in my purse. It's not in my computer bag. I left it at the church. So Linda has her phone. She calls Vanetta and Pastor Adams. And they said, what?
It's like midnight.
It's like midnight.
Okay. So they said, "No worries. We'll go back to the church and look for your phone."
Back to the church. My husband and I are 12 in the middle of the night. We check the parking lot. My husband opened the church door. There's no phone. And so we don't know. And Linda kept calling me.
Yeah, we're calling.
Someone is answering the phone. A behavior person is answering the phone.
So Linda finally says, I'll call your phone for you. She had my number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what happened?
Okay, so I call her phone, and this guy answers. This man answers it. And I'm going, I'm looking. I pretended I was her, so I'm looking for my phone. Where's my phone? Did you steal it? And this guy goes, hey, man, where are you?
What do you want?
Hey, man, where you at? Where you at? And I'm going, okay, well, that's interesting, but that's kind of island talk, you know. And so I thought, wow, you must have my phone. So I'm just yelling at him, you have my phone, give it back. I know where you are, and I want to know where that phone is. And you can't have that phone. I'm like yelling and everything. So anyway, the guy hangs up on me. So I call him back, of course, and he's going, I'll meet you, or something like that. And then I said, no, I'll tell you where to come. You have to, you know, and I'm yelling again, where's the phone? So anyway, the whole thing was hysterical. So that was going on. Yes. Okay.
Then we called Pastor Adams back.
Yes.
And he said, I remember when you got out of the car, there was a lonely man walking down the street just alone by himself with a hoodie, and I bet it fell off your lap and he picked it up. Okay.
Okay.
That must have been what happened. So we all go to bed. He's got my phone. So the next day, Linda calls three more times. And we hear one time there's rock music playing in the car, and somebody saying, okay, where's the next turn? A lady in the car.
Yeah, somebody in the car.
So we know this guy has my phone. So I start using Linda's phone, and I spent hours calling AT&T back in the States to cancel my phone.
Because we're in
Stephon. Yes.
In the Bahamas.
So we go out for lunch, and then we come back, and I lay down to take a nap. And I see something behind my lamp charging. It's my phone.
It was the phone.
We do not know to this day who answered. I didn't even look, because we knew this man answered and he had it. We figured. So anyway, then I tried to call back on my phone, I guess, and get it. And it's canceled. Yeah. So then I can't get it back for the whole rest of the trip in the Bahamas. Okay. Thank you, ladies. I'm going to read a little bit.
Another story. The rest of it is
when Shelly left the Bahamas, she left with her phone. I got a call, Vanetta, I need you to call the lady for the place. I left my slip. I said, what? She said, yes, I can't find it. Then a couple of days, I got another call. I found it. It was in the washroom. So it was, oh my goodness.
It was now you can see why we haven't been invited back. But it's mostly me. Okay, I want to read you. I want to read you what Kwame said, okay? Okay, well, I reposted it today. I've been up since 3, laughing, thinking, oh, thank you, thinking about all the fun we had, and I didn't go back to sleep, so we'll see how clear-minded I am. But I did, if you go on Shelley Hamilton Facebook post, I did rewrite this whole story this morning since I was up. But I want to read you, Crummy was our host and driver for the week, and Crummy told us as he was driving us to the airport or somewhere after this. Oh, I need to put this back on. I took several Excedrin migraine and coffee, and I'm a little jittery from my caffeine. Okay. He said, you need to write a post, how to steal your own phone. And this is what he said. He's very clever. Stealing someone's phone is easy, simple, and outdated. Oh, yeah, and wrong. But stealing your own phone is none of those things. Placing your phone somewhere where that will be easy for you to forget where it is, that is key. If it's not done properly, you will simply find your phone in minutes. And who wants to do that? So this is my final theory. I concluded about my stolen phone that after calling the unidentified thief 5 times demanding he get back my phone, he said, enough. Climbed in through my open bedroom window while I was sleeping. I leave open for fresh air. Placed the phone on my bedside table and then, for revenge, took one of my earrings. So that's my story and I'm sticking to it. Oh, my word. Okay. So today's session, Give It to God, I have meant to be just a testimony. I call it an unrehearsed, unscripted testimony of my life. And I'm going to, since we had so much fun, what time is it? Okay. I'm going to go through this pretty quickly. I was born in 1954 in Rochester, New York. My dad was going to the Eastman School of Music at the time, getting his master's degree. And he and mom, of course, were married. And he worked at Eastman Kodak all night developing pictures. At the time, that's what they did before cell phones. And he got a call from Pensacola, Florida, from, I'm not going to be able to think of names, it was at Brent Baptist, whoever was the pastor there at the time. Can't think of his name. And he said, can you come and be the music pastor? So Dad had just finished his master's or was about done with it, I think, something like that. So when I was 6 weeks old, I was born in January, obviously, 23rd. Oh, I didn't say one more thing that happened.
Oh,
on the 24th, no, the 25th. My birthday was the 23rd. The 24th, we lost the phone. We were trying to find the phone. On the 25th, which I'm going to tell you in my testimony, my sister and her husband invited me to bring my husband down, who had dementia, to help me take care of him. And they live in Navarre, Florida. So we went down there, lived for a year until my dad actually passed 6 weeks before my husband, Ron. Dad unexpectedly got prostate cancer, and then Ron passed. And so then I moved back home to Greenville, and on the 25th, while we were still in the Bahamas, how did I find out? On Facebook or something?
I think you got an email or something.
Yes, probably FaceTime works on my computer. And anyway, their home had burned completely on the inside. Only the shell was left. But nobody was hurt. So that was the end of the week.
And I was starting to feel better.
Oh, yes. She's leaving, and she's like, oh, I feel good today. After she had spoken all week. Okay, so anyway, we moved down to Florida. That's what reminded me of Gene and David. And we lived in Pensacola, and that's where my parents got to be good friends with Arlen and Becca Horton, who started PCC. And Dad was on the board for years at PCC. So he was music pastor, and then they asked him to start a school at Brent Baptist. Brother Price, that was his name, Bradley Price, was the pastor. I don't know if any of you know him. But anyway, so Dad started the school. That's kind of a long story in itself. And then he thought, I need more training. So we moved back up to Rochester for him to get his doctorate in music. So back up, oh, and Randy, my brother, was born down in Pensacola. So we moved back up to Rochester, and Dad, if he hadn't finished his master's, finished it, and then worked on his doctorate, but didn't quite get done. And then he got a call from Dr. Gustafson, the Dean of the Fine Arts at Bob Jones University, and said, can you come and teach theory and trombone here at Bob Jones? And Dad said, well, I haven't quite finished my doctorate. And Dr. Gus said, we need you now. So Dad, we picked up our family, moved to Bob Jones, and arrived when I was 6 years old, the day before first grade. That's how I remember. And we lived there. I mean, Dad taught there for a long time. And when I was 15, a young man from South Bend, Indiana, Ron Hamilton, came to Bob Jones, and he started singing in my dad's Vesper choir on the campus. And I saw him standing on the back row of the bleachers
And I had really, honestly, I just dreamt of marrying a blonde-haired, blue-eyed guy. And there he was. And I could tell he was hitting all the low bass notes, and my heart melted. And he saw me running across back campus in my cheerleading outfit trying to get to the academy on time from after lunch. So it was love at first sight for both of us. We dated 6 years and finally got married in 1975. And at the time, my dad said, Ron was teaching. He was done with school. He's 3 years older than I am. And so he was teaching voice and directing the academy choir, which at the time was about 100 kids. It was, Bob Jones was very big back then. And so anyway, Dad said, can you travel with me the next year after Ron and I got married? Well, it's 3 years after we got married. And I just finished getting, I had 3 more years of school, my senior year of college and then 2 years of master's in piano performance. So we agreed. We prayed about it and agreed we should go. So this is in about January because we had to let the school know in February. So there's an announcement that comes to all the faculty and staff that an optometrist the next school year is going to make give a free pair of eyeglasses to whoever needs it. So Ron was started having trouble seeing the music over his student's shoulders. So he said, he went to the dean of men and said, would I be eligible for these free eyeglasses? And they said, we don't know. We'll check on it and we'll get back to you. Well, in the meantime, my mom said, you need to call Dr. Kauser. He's an ophthalmologist, a doctor, an eye doctor rather than just a glasses doctor. And so that time came, was coming close, and we still had not heard from the dean of men. So we went ahead and went to Dr. Kauser. And at the end of the exam, I don't know if they do this now or not, but at the time, optometrists did not put that final step with eye drops so that they could see through the whole eyeball. And so Dr. Kauser did that to Ron, and he's a very calm. He was a missionary kid and very calm individual. He came out very excitedly to the waiting room to get me and took me back to the eye examining room and wanted me to look through the ophthalmoscope at Ron's eyeball. And he says, it may just be a popped blood vessel. It was green and irregular in shape. So he pretty much knew it was melanoma cancer. But he said it could be a popped blood vessel. But he, we went into his office with him, and he called Dr. Bell, the head of ophthalmology at Emory University in Atlanta, and we started a series of tests. It was at the back of the eyeball. So the concern was, if it wasn't self-contained in the eye, it would go to his brain, and there would be nothing they could do for him then. So the final step was surgery. And they, the day before surgery, May 17th, 1978, they put a dye in Ron's system that could, when they put the Geiger counter directly on the growth, it would read out malignant or not. So the doctor actually said, why don't you just go live it up, you know, go out to eat somewhere that you love. So we went for fried shrimp. It was my favorite, and I couldn't eat a thing. I thought it was just a stress. And the next morning, we went back that night, and he checked in, and they said, can we give you it's a trial medicine for diabetics? Because the floor where we did all the testing was a diabetic floor because they lose a lot of times, have trouble with their eyes from all the insulin. So anyway, said that we wanted to give you a trial medicine for diabetes in case we take the eyeball out, we can see if the eyeball absorbed it. So Ron said yes. Well, the next morning, I got to see him for the last time before he went into surgery. And I think it's 3 or 4 hours later. The doctor came into the waiting room, and my mom had driven down to be with me. And he said, well, I have good news and bad news. The good news is it's not spread to the brain. The bad news, it was melanoma, and we took his eyeball out. So we got to the recovery room soon after, and he started throwing up violently. Well, the medicine had made him sick. and then, come to find out, in case I forget to tell you later, I have since learned from several different sources that most people that get melanoma in their eye
do not survive. In fact, they called us once a year afterwards to see if he was still alive, basically. But God had different plans for him. The first Sunday, the doctor said, just put a black, you can go to the drugstore and get a black plastic eye patch. And so we did that. And the first Sunday back at church, one of the little kids came up to us after the service and said, hey, what's that over your eye? And Ron said, well, it's called a pirate patch. It was called a pirate patch. He said, in fact, you can call me Patch the Pirate. And the kid loved that. He ran back and told his friends. And in a few minutes, all these kids came running down. Ahoy, Patch the Pirate. And the name stuck. We started writing audio adventures for kids. Just to make a long story short, if you want more details, I have written his biography. It's at our table, called The Man Behind the Patch. And so it's about 45 adventures later now that we have, and 700 published songs. So anyway, I want to briefly tell you, I talked about this a couple years ago when I was here, but in 1998, our oldest son, who was a sophomore in college, took an antibiotic for acne that sent him into a clinical depression. And it was very serious. He had to drop out of school. When I went back to the dermatologist, I said, could it be this medicine? And he said, yes, get him off of it. Three times he told me. I said, well, how long till he comes back to himself? He said, in about 2 weeks. Well, he never did. But mental health problems are in our family. So he eventually was diagnosed with schizophrenia. And I would cry myself to sleep. It is our oldest of five children. And it was a horrible disease. Schizophrenia, he was paranoid, delusional, hearing voices. And I believe he was hearing voices just by the things he told us. So anyway, how am I going to make this quick? I told the Lord, I think you have the wrong guy. Jonathan went out soul winning 2 to 3 times a week. He wanted to be a music pastor. He had won 20 people to the Lord. In fact, at Bob Jones, they gave him a soul winner's award his freshman year because he loved to go soul winning. And I thought, Jesus, you have the wrong guy. And I would cry myself to sleep, and I couldn't sleep. And finally, it was a neighbor of mine, Sarah Bennett, who was a retired missionary now, but she lived across the street part-time and then part-time in Haiti. And she would have devotions with me every morning. I went over at 6:30, and she'd give me something from Scripture. And she said, many times, all I did was cry. She had Kleenex on her coffee table. But she helped me trust in the Lord. And she said, you know, if all the stories of great women and men of faith were taken out of the Bible, despite unbelievable circumstances, our Bibles would be like that big. And the just shall live by faith, Romans 1:17, became my life verse during that time. The just shall live by faith. And I wanted to be a part of that just. And it just finally dawned on me. At first, I was angry. I was angry at God. Then it finally realized my anger was misplaced. God made the world to be beautiful and good and everything in it. Bad things happen because of Satan. He's the author of sin, sickness, sorrow, sadness, and death. Satan wants us to believe bad things happen because God is not good, but it is instead because Satan is evil. And when that finally struck home, that was about 1999 or 2000, it's never left me. I've gone through a lot of trials since then, but that truth has never left me. And I know that God is always only good. And if you want more details on Jonathan's illness, he went through it for 15 years before His main medicine, a generic, came out, and the insurance wouldn't pay the $1,000 a month anymore. So we tried like 5 different generics, and finally they were making him, I think, going off and on so many. And the doctor said, we should be able to find one. And my husband said, we cannot afford $1,000 a month forever. So anyway, he finally, unbeknownst to us, he took himself off all his medicine and then tragically took his life, jumping from a parking garage downtown Greenville. And that was the worst trial of Ron's in my life. So that was Mother's Day, May 12th, 2013. Well, in 2010, my husband started having trouble remembering things. So this was 3 years before John died. And I'm so glad I had him enough to help me get through John's death. But then it started getting worse. And then Megan started dating a young man named Adam Morgan, who was studying to be a lawyer. He was in Columbia at law school. And I thought, okay, Jonathan's gone. I had dreams that he would take over Majesty Music someday, which is our company. But that wasn't God's will and timing. And so she started dating Adam, and I thought, okay, well, we must need a lawyer in the family, you know. And Ron was having a hard time writing the New Patch Adventures because of his dementia. So Megan asked Ron, senior class president at Bob Jones University, can I ask him to try to help? And at the time, he was in law school. So Ron said, sure. So Ron started, he wrote in some funny characters for Kilimanjaro, one of the Patch Adventures, and then wrote a song, Barefoot Ben, which is our other son-in-law, Ben Farrell. And so anyway, we knew he had some talent. So the next year, it must have been 2017, Ron gave Megan and Adam just write the whole next Patch Adventure. And they wrote their first Patch Adventure, Ocean Commotion. And it's also part, do you all do AIG, the VBS, Answers in Genesis, VBS program? We write the traditional music for that program, and Ocean Commotion was one of their summer programs, and it became our new Patch Adventure. So Adam and Megan have written it ever since then. And right after they were married, I went to Adam, and Ron was, I was trying to run our, we had 23 employees at Majesty, and I just thought, this is not my gift set at all. So I went to Adam and I said, wouldn't you like to run Majesty Music? And he said, no, I don't think so. I need to pay back my law degree. And the Majesty Music salary was not going to do that. So a couple weeks later, he approached me in the hallway at Majesty and said, you know that question you asked me? He said, I talked to my parents and they said they've been praying about it, that I might take over this ministry. And he said, they said, you'll eventually pay back your law degree. Don't worry about it. So Adam has been running Majesty Music ever since. It's a God thing. He's so talented. Anyway, and Megan writes a lot of the music as well. Our daughter who sang Wednesday night, if you were here, and she's singing tonight in the concert. But that's our daughter, Megan, and she's the one married to Adam. So anyway, before I talked to Adam, I found out his dad was a great businessman. And I said, Adam, do you think your dad, his name was Tim, would mind giving me some business advice? So he said, I'm sure he would, you know, because he said he grew up on Patch Adventures, their family. They traveled a lot with his dad's business, and they listened to Patch Adventures. So anyway, I went to Tim, and he tried to give me some advice. And I eventually said, wouldn't you like to buy Majesty Music? Because he has 5 companies. He said, no, I don't think it's a wise idea because there's no main writer. Because Ron couldn't write anymore. I arrange, but I don't write original music or Patch Adventure stories. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to sell the property and live off that. So, but Tim nor I had the foresight or foreknowledge to know what God was going to do. His son was going to become the main writer. Isn't that a God thing? Lawyer turned, he says, singing pirate. He's now known as Commodore on the Patch Adventures. So anyway, still trying to progress quickly. Ron's in dementia. We traveled with Adam and Megan for a couple years until I finally said, I just can't do it anymore. I couldn't get Ron out of the shower. And I would go finally turn the water off, and he'd turn it back on. He wasn't clearly thinking. He couldn't get his socks on, and he didn't want me to help him. So we would be late to the concerts. And at the time, hardly anybody knew, you know, what was going on. We hadn't advertised it. So it was kind of embarrassing. In December 2017, I said, that's it. You all are going to have to travel by yourself. I was going to tell you a story. This is going back. When Ron and I are dating and he's in college, my dad really, and Ron was in dad's choir, but he was a cut-up. And so Ron really didn't want me dating Ron. And my mother had another guy in mind that she wanted me to date and marry, which my best friend ended up marrying. But anyway, I'll tell you one story, and you may understand why. Ron was in freshman speech class. All the students have to take freshman speech at the time. And his teacher was Miss Merriman. And like I said, Ron was a cut-up. And she was talking at the front of the room and said, now I need all of you, when you get up here to speak, speak up so the back of the room can hear, because that's my pet peeve. So Ron raised his hand in the back of the room and said, Miss Merriman, can you speak up? We can't hear you back here. Then they went around the room and told where they were from and what their major was. And when it was Ron's turn, he got him, he said, well, my name is Ron Hamilton, and I'm a music major. Which they laughed, but she glared at him. And then he said, I'm from Neck of the Woods, Indiana. And she said, Neck of the Woods, I've never heard of that. And he said, that's because that's all we ever do there is Neck in the Woods. Okay, so now we're going back to Ron's dementia, okay, from that. In 2018, he was actually put on hospice. You're put on hospice if they think you only have 2 years to live. And he had frontotemporal dementia, which affects the front part of your brain. So it affected his language, which is what controls your language. And so I say, you know, he really wasn't supposed to have lived after his eye cancer, but God gave him 40 years to write music. And then the very gift he had of language was the gift taken from him with his dementia. I remember one time we left, we finally were at a success in aging doctor, and they were telling us everything we should expect. And it was kind of depressing, you know, but it was honest. We needed to know. And when we left, I thought, oh, I'm going to try to encourage Ron. And as we were driving out of the parking lot, at that point, he couldn't drive. And so I was driving, and I said, honey, do you know how many people your music has affected for good? And you have to understand, he was hardly talking at the time because of his dementia. And he said, I'd like to think God did it. So that showed he was still there. So I was having trouble. I had help that came in, but I have trouble with my thyroid and getting tired. You girls probably remember I had to take a lot of naps. And anyway, so I was, my sister Gina, who lived in, and her husband David lived in Navarre, and my mother had dementia. And the last year of her life, Dad moved her down there to live with David and Gina. They wanted to take care of Mom. Mom said, I always wanted to take care of my parents when they were older. And she's a home ec major and did a great job. She cooked for them. She was great. So they moved down there for Mom's last year. And then Dad, we thought he'd move back to Greenville. He had so many friends there. He says, no, I'm going to stay right here with Gina David and Gina live on the water. Now, remember, theirs is the house that burned. In fact, that was January 25th, 2024. It's still not done on the inside. It's still waiting for insurance. A lot of it's done, but they can't finish the plumbing and the flooring till they get more money. So anyway, so what am I saying? So mom passed away. Dad wanted to stay down there. They lived on the Santa Rosa Sound, and he loved it. He had all his books there. He was still writing books. And it came to be 2023, February. I had just gone to speak at a ladies' conference in Charleston and had come back late. And Gene and David were at a Super Bowl party. That's what I remember. So it must have been February 12th or 13th. It was a Super Bowl party. And I tried to call Dad, but he didn't have his phone on him. He was in the kitchen trying to scrounge up food. And Gina called me and said, there's no food in the house. You need to stop and get something, you know, for Dad and Ron. And I got lost, not that you can imagine, from the airport in the dark. And I never found something to eat. So when I got home, I made, there was bread and cheese. I said, I made grilled cheese sandwiches. Well, Dad said, well, I really shouldn't eat this because it might upset my stomach. But he was so hungry, so he ate it. Well, the next morning, he was so sick. So sick, and we thought it was the grilled cheese. Well, long story short, we finally took him on. That was a Monday. On Wednesday, we took him to the emergency room, and they ambulanced he and I to Sacred Heart Hospital in Pensacola, where he was diagnosed with prostate cancer. And they said he had 2 weeks to live. So we brought him back home. So we have Ron in one hospice bed in the living room and Dad in another hospice bed in the bedroom, which was off the living room. That was his room anyway. So there was one day Gina came in, my sister, with her phone and took a video and said, people are asking, what are your last words of wisdom you want to leave people? And Dad said, give it to God. Thus the title of my testimony. Gina said, give what? He said, everything. Your time, your talents, your family, everything. Give it to God. And within a few days, he was gone. I don't have time to tell. I'll tell one story. This maybe you will think this is inappropriate because it's funny. But anyway, Charlie was Dad's chaplain and also Ron's chaplain for hospice, the hospice chaplain. And Charlie was actually in the room with me when Dad died. And as Dad was taking his last breath, we didn't know it. But Dad had his eyes closed. And Charlie said, I've got to tell you a funny story. I'm going to try to tell this very quickly because it's very interesting. When Charlie met Dad, he said, Frank Garlock, I read a book by Frank Garlock once called something about a rock beat or something. And Dad said, that's me. I'm Frank Garlock. And he said, that's great, you know. That's all he said. Okay, so now Dad's on his deathbed, and Charlie said, I have to tell you a story. I used to be the DJ at a rock radio station. And one of my friends had a rock, I don't know if it was CCM magazine, and asked if I would write an article on why CCM is good. So he said, I did. And then somebody from Bob Jones read it and said, oh, we need to bring you down to Bob Jones on WMUU radio station and debate Frank Garlock. So, well, I think they maybe just did it over the phone. I don't remember. So they had this debate. And at the very end, this sticks out in my mind. He said, I thought I won. And I'm sure your dad thought he won. So anyway, he said at the very end, the closing statement was a caller. Is obviously a Southern guy that probably owned a truck. And he said, you know, I listen to you, Mr. Charlie, but I can tell you, every time I hear rock music, I think I'm in the back of my truck making love to my woman. And Charlie said, I don't know what to say to that. Anyway, at that, Dad took his last breath. And I said, I hope Dad heard that. Charlie, why didn't you tell him? He said, I was afraid he wouldn't he wouldn't respect me as his chaplain. Okay, so even funny too. So we call the coroner. He comes and is talking to David in their living room, and there's Ron, you know, in his hospice bed, asleep. So they're talking, and finally the coroner went, "Oh, I think he moved." Ron turned over, and he thought he was picking up Ron. We said, no, not him. Okay, so I want to read just two things, oh goodness, very quickly to you. Let's see if I can find the first thing. This was interesting. When Ron, before he lost his eye, Terry, his brother, was also at Bob Jones, and he said Ron was unusually quiet for himself. And so he went into his office one day and said, "Ron, are you doing okay?" And Ron said, "Terry, I've spent hours in prayer regarding losing my eye to cancer. For some reason, I don't have peace about asking for healing. I believe that somehow losing my eye is God's best for me." So anyway, my dad died on March 3rd, and I was going to read a little bit of my book, but it's 10 of. So I just want to close just about the last days before Ron passed. It took him 7 days from when they thought he was passing to pass. And someone said, "Has he not said his final goodbyes to somebody?" And we said, "No, we think he has to everyone." And then my kids said, "I think he's holding on for you, Mom." But it took him a long time in the hospice. When the day before he died, they said, we were talking about it in our hospice meeting this morning with all of our staff. And they said, "We've never seen someone hold on so long before." But he finally passed on April 19th. April 19th. Okay, there's more I can say, but my mind is going. But what I want to read, Henry Ward Beecher is a member in our ancestors. The Ward family, my grandpa's mom was Jessie Ward. She wrote poetry. Music is in our family. Poetry and music, and unfortunately mental health issues as well. But anyway, Henry Ward Beecher, the Wards had a castle next door to Charles Dickens in Cornwall. And I've looked at pictures of it. It's like a big fortress, you know, what they had. So anyway, Henry Ward Beecher preached against slavery. Some people credit him with helping to start the Civil War because he preached against it. His sister, Harriet Beecher Stowe, did I say that right? Harriet Beecher Stowe wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin. So that's part of our family, but Henry Ward Beecher wrote this, so I want to close. "When a good or a great person's life comes to its final sunset, the skies of this world are illuminated until long after he is out of view. Such a person does not die from this world, right? For when he departs, he leaves much of himself behind, as Pastor Scudder has. And being dead, he still speaks." Thank you.